Coming up on the Rami LaVie podcast, the Jets lose in devastating fashion in Minnesota, but I love this team. I love Mike White. I'll explain all that. Aaron Rodgers, yes, you still own Chicago, but nobody cares. San Francisco gets a statement win in the NFC, but unfortunately it comes at a price. Philly gets a statement win also in the NFC, and maybe Jalen Hurts should move into the conversation for one of those top quarterbacks in the league. And speaking of the top quarterbacks in the league, should there be a conversation about the top two? And should we be looking at Burrow over Mahomes? All that, I talked about all the games, a whole lot more next on the Rami LaVie podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
One of the things I talk about on this podcast a lot is the stigma against mental health. I think, unfortunately, there has been a stigma, but we're slowly breaking it. And if you think you might be feeling depressed, stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, or maybe you just want to talk to someone, today's sponsor, BetterHelp, is here to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help. Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that may not be available in your area. You just fill out a questionnaire to help access your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Plus, you can exchange unlimited text messages, and everything you share is completely confidential. So I talk about on this podcast how your mindset towards things changes everything. One of the things that I learned in therapy was that join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Rami. That's my first name. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Rami, my first name, Rami. If you use that link, the link is in the description in the podcast notes. If you use that link, you'll get 10% off and it'll also help me out. So please do that. I'm telling you, it's worth it. Do it today. Welcome back to the Rami LaVie podcast, episode 118. It is Sunday night. We're recording late Sunday night, early Monday morning, getting ready for the week. Monday morning reaction pod. This is how it is. It was a great day. It was a fun day of football. We talked about it on Friday's episode, how it was going to be a fun day of football, how there were a lot of fun games, and I really think it lived up to it. I think there was so much to talk about, and first and foremost, I have to start with my Jets because everyone knows, big Jet fan here. And that game, the way it went, now on Friday, I told you I didn't expect the Jets to win this game. And I wasn't just saying that so that I'd feel better about myself after the game when the Jets did lose and be celebrating when the Jets won. It's very easy to do that. No, I just genuinely didn't think the Jets were going to win this game. I thought a lot of people, too many people were on the Jets. But also more than that, and I tweeted that before the game, I said so many people are on the Jets, I can't see them winning this. But also, I didn't think that just because the Jets had one good game against a bad Bears team, and they were surging, and they've looked pretty good, and the defense has looked good, and all the things we talked about, and Mike White is definitely better than Zach Wilson, and we'll get to all that in a minute. I didn't think that just because they had that game and coming into the game, I didn't think that they were going to go into a tough environment in Minnesota, a tough place to play, and beat a 9-2 Vikings team that has proven to be extremely capable. I didn't think that was a realistic expectation. Did I think they could move the ball on the Vikings? Yes. Did I think that they could slow down Kirk Cousins and get pressure with four and slow down the receivers, even Jefferson and Thielen? Yes. And I was right about all those things. The Vikings have found ways to win games. They've done it incredibly well at home, especially this year. And so they did it again. I'm not terribly shocked that the Jets lost this game. I'm upset and disappointed, but not in a way that I've been in my life. This is very different for me than most of the Jets' losses in my life, and I'll explain. Most Jet losses in my life result in me being angry. Bad penalties, dumb mistakes, dumb play calling, things at the end of games that cause you to look at them and say, we were right there, we should have won. And for a lot of Jets fans, maybe this is one of those games where we felt like we were right there because the Jets, yes, we're quite literally right there at the goal line a couple of times, and they had chances to win this game. But I didn't feel like they screwed up. I didn't feel mad. I didn't feel angry that my team messed up and let me down. I felt like sometimes in the NFL, you just lose to a team that's better than you, or a team that's at home, or a team that jumped out to a big lead because of circumstances, or a team that just beat you and you got beat and you didn't do certain things right and other things you did do right, but just not well enough, and they did better than you. Sometimes that happens, and that happens in every sport, and that happens in the NFL, and it's okay to lose. And for the first time this season, it feels like the Jets just lost a game because they just weren't as good as the other team, and that's okay. And yes, there are no moral victories, and we'll get to all that later in the episode, because I'm going to talk about this game for a little bit. I do want to take you back from the beginning of the game and walk you through my emotions throughout the game till the very end of it, and the post game, and some of the stuff that was said by the Jets after the game, and kind of break it down and break down where Mike White is, where this defense stands, where this team stands going forward, because it's not going to be an easy ride the rest of the season either. But I'm not upset at this team. I'm not angry. I'm not mad. I'm not pissed off. I just feel like someone who's a regular sports fan who's just kind of down after a bad beat, down after a bad loss. And as a Jets fan, that actually feels really good to not feel like I'm angry and I have someone to blame and someone to run and argue about. It's just like, all right, sucks. We'll get him next time. We should have won that one. We could have won that one. It was right there, but we didn't. Didn't execute at the end. Came down to a couple plays. We didn't make them. They did. Sucks. Happens sometimes. But the fact that my team was in a game like that and that's how it ended, that's a win as a Jet fan, as pathetic as that may sound. So I want to start from the top and go through the entire game. The start of the game, the offensive started really sluggish. Corey Davis in particular had two penalties on him, a false start and a hold that were huge. He then had the tip ball, the ball that he tipped up that was intercepted. He could have made a catch on that ball instead. It's a turnover on the first drive of the game. So really rough start for the offense, but rough start specifically for Corey Davis, and it kind of slows them down when, you know, every single game, I think it was every game that Mike White has been in, he's driven right down the field and scored on his opening drive, and you wanted to come out and score, you wanted to set the tone. That's how they've been able to do it, throwing the ball with Mike White. They did it last week, and unfortunately you couldn't do that because of a couple of dumb penalties and a bad interception. That's, no, I'm not blaming Corey Davis entirely for it. The throw was a drop behind him, but if you get your hands on it, you should catch it and bring it in. You should definitely not have it pop up in the air. I know, you know, he can't help it. If it pops up, it pops up, and then it's intercepted. There was a second ball to Conklin, I think it was, that also popped up. A couple of drops, a couple of throws that just weren't there. The running game never really got going. Just a real sluggish start for the offense. On the defensive side, Michael Carter II. So Michael Carter, the running back, was out, but Michael Carter II, who is the corner, who is playing in the slot in this game and has been playing in the slot really well for the Jets all year. Obviously, they have Reed and Sauce on the outside. They didn't travel with Justin Jefferson, although on the last touchdown drive, and maybe we'll get to this a little bit later, I don't know if anyone asked Salah about this, so I won't get to it later because I'll just throw it out here. On the last touchdown drive of the game, as I'm skipping ahead a little bit, I'll get back to Michael Carter in a second. Reed did travel to the other side of the field with Justin Jefferson, I guess with safety help, and still obviously they score the touchdown. I didn't love that. If you're going to travel a safety with Justin Jefferson, wouldn't it be Sauce Gardner and not DJ Reed? I don't know, but again, I trust this coaching staff, and it sucks that they happen to score a touchdown on that drive. Not the point. The point is Michael Carter is playing really well. Michael Carter II, MC squared, whatever you want to call him. Fantastic early. Really good. Like, really good in the slot. Always on everything. Big tackles. Coming up and making plays. Pass deflections. Reading everything. And then he gets hurt, and he goes out with an ankle. And right away, they go at Brandon Echols. They realized he's out. We're going to go at Echols immediately, and they did. And that drive where they were methodical driving down the field, the Vikings were, they went at Brandon Echols. Now, the Vikings early were also controlling the line of scrimmage, and specifically against the run. They had the ability to run the ball on this Jets defense early, and they stopped the Jets from running the ball. And a lot of what Mike White relies on is running the football and then running play action off of it, and it wasn't there. All that stuff wasn't opening up. Those intermediate passes that he loves so much were not there because the Jets weren't able to run the football. And on the defensive side, the Jets, what they're so good at is getting pressure with four. And when Kirk was pressured in this game, he was awful. You saw he had a few throws that were just terrible, not even close to receivers. Not that they were tipped. I think he was 0-for-5 to start or 0-for-6 to start. Not that they were tipped balls or anything like that. They were just passes that were so bad because there was pressure on the defense and pressure in his face, and that's the way to beat Kirk Cousins, is to get pressure on him. And early on they got pressure, but once the Vikings started running the ball so well, it kind of alleviated some of that pressure of the Jets front. I saw a couple of times where the Jets got pressure with three, literally only sending three, and Kirk couldn't do anything when he was pressured, but he was getting the ball off quickly. They made a smart adjustment to get him quick passes, get him rhythm passes to the slot receivers, just run them a little bit over the middle. That's why Michael Carter being out was so huge as well, and Brendan Echols being in instead of him was huge, because they wanted to use those slot receivers on quick bubble screens and quick slant routes and in routes just to get quick receptions, to get the ball out of Kirk's hands quick. It worked. They got the pressure off of him a little bit. They were able to run the football, which got the pressure off of him a little bit. A very good job, very good play call, very good design, very good coaching by the Vikings. Credit to them. Early in the game as well, Minnesota converts a 4th-and-2 on their touchdown drive, and then the Jets come the other way and they fail on a 4th-and-2. To me, that was a huge part of the game. It leads to Minnesota 3 points. And if you talk about those 10 points where Minnesota converts on a 4th-and-2 to score a touchdown, the Jets fail on a 4th-and-2, it leads directly to Minnesota scoring 3 points. That's 10 points in the first half. The Jets go down 20-6 at the first half. And when you look at the first half, Minnesota converted on so many third downs, and that was huge in this game. They were 7-for-11 on third down conversions in the first half. And the Jets just overall looked disjointed. Like I said, down 20-6 at the half, and you're not feeling great. They do get the field goal at the end of the half. Great kick by Legatron, or I don't know. It's so funny because they call him Legatron now, but wasn't it Greg the Leg? Wasn't it always Greg the Leg? Because that just works. It just rhymes. So why do you have to go and call him Legatron? Anyway, he kicks a 60-yard field goal to get them within 14 to make it a 2-score game, which was a big field goal at the time. But like I said, the Jets just look disjointed. You know, the Vikings get the ball back to start the second half. 7-for-11 on third down was devastating, because so many plays in that first half, it felt like the Jets were right there. It felt like they had an opportunity to get off the field. It felt like they had an opportunity to get a stop and a penalty here, something else there. And it was just not Jets football. It was disappointing. It was upsetting. And the Jets, one of the things they've done that's so good coming into this game was they were one of the least penalized teams in the league the last few weeks. And they have bad penalties. They're giving up third down conversions. They're not getting pressure with 3 and 4. They have tip passes, balls off guys' hands on the offensive side, just misassignments, just bad stuff, just sloppy play. Like I said, sluggish on the offensive side, but really sloppy on both sides of the field. And it was like, we're down 14. It didn't feel like the Jets were getting blown out, though. It felt like they were right there on so many plays, and they just couldn't finish drives, couldn't finish plays on the defensive side, couldn't finish on the offensive side. And it was upsetting. But I didn't feel down. I didn't feel like this game was over. I just felt like the Jets were close and they just had to break through. But at the same time, all of the excuses you start thinking start coming into your head. All those Jets, okay, here's they're going to lose. This makes sense that they're going to lose. And I start thinking about it. I'm like, well, Minnesota's 9-2 coming into the game. It makes sense. You're not going to beat a 9-2 team. The Jets haven't played an offense like that the entire season, right? You talk about an offense like Minnesota that's methodical. And this is what I wrote down at halftime. Minnesota was just methodical. They get keep you on the field. They go third down, third down. They tire out the defense. They throw it quickly, so they alleviate some of that pass rush. They're able to get guys in quick crossing routes. The Jets never had to face anything like that. And then I start looking at the Jets' wins, and I'm like, maybe this Jets defense just really isn't that good. Look at the quarterbacks that they've beaten. They beat Jacoby Brissett. They beat Skylar Thompson, who was playing, obviously, for Miami. They beat the combination of Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett in his first career start. They beat the 2022 versions of Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, which are not great. They beat Trevor Siemian, who had a torn oblique. He's out for the season now. He played last week with a torn oblique, right? He tore his oblique in warmups and now had season-ending surgery on that. Oh, and they also beat Josh Allen, who's a deep shot quarterback. That's the best quarterback that they've beaten, obviously, but he's a guy. He's not a dink and dunk, slow, methodical drive type guy. So I'm like, maybe the Jets defense can't stop an offense like this. Maybe that's the problem here. All those things are going through my head, and I'm like, it's just, maybe this isn't it. And they're down big. They're down 14, and the defense knows. Now Minnesota's defense knows. We're up 14. We can pin it back. We're stopping the run all game, and we can go at Mike White, and we can beat him. And yet there was still this confidence that I had in Mike White. And it wasn't an easy day in the first half for Mike White, or really all day long. Everything was just a little bit off. I talked so much after last week's game about him sliding his feet in the pocket and being able to create time for himself, move a little bit. He wasn't able to do that. He wasn't able to step into throws. Him throwing on the run, it's ugly. It's not fun to watch when he has to throw on the run. He has to move around a little bit. He's not the most mobile guy. He has good awareness and pocket awareness, but the pockets were collapsing on him quickly. And he just, everything looked a tick off. The throws were just a drop off as well. And yet he fought through. Even in a game like this, he fought through. He went back out there and he stepped up for the Jets and he put them in a position in the second half under the pressure, under everything. He was so impressive in that second half. By the way, this isn't the first time we've seen him play from behind and put the Jets in a position to win a game. If you remember, the first time we ever saw Mike White, the original Mike White game against Cincinnati, in that game, the Jets were down 17-10 against Joe Burrow and the Bengals. The Jets were down 24-17 in the game, and then finally they were down 31-20 in the fourth quarter of that game. And all three times, Mike White came back and kept bringing the Jets back. In the second half, the Jets outscored the Vikings 16-7, led by Mike White. The touchdown drive, obviously. They kicked a ton of field goals, and that was the biggest story. That's the story of the game if you think about everything. But they had multiple chances to win this game. And I'm not going to say that Mike White didn't take advantage of that chance, because if it weren't for Mike White, they wouldn't have been in those positions to win that game. He repeatedly made some huge throws to put them in the position to win that game. The defense in the second half, don't forget about them. They stepped up. And how about Quinnen Williams? Quinnen Williams on one drive had a tackle for a loss and a sack on back-to-back plays on a second and third down. Basically single-handedly was like, I'm taking over this drive and ending it right here. Who was it? I don't remember his name anymore. Who was the guy on Fox who said the Jets don't have quote-unquote difference makers on the defensive end? Meet Quinnen Williams, like I said. He is a real difference maker on the defensive end, and he showed up on that drive. And by the way, he knocked his shoulder out of his socket and had to leave the game and came back for the last drive when the Jets forced a three and out after they turned the ball over on downs with a minute 43 to go. They forced the three and out. Yeah, that was Quinnen Williams who came back with the shoulder, just got it popped back in on the sideline and came back in. So an incredible job by Quinnen Williams in that game. But the only thing the Jets couldn't do the entire second half, and I said this at the half also, I said, the way the Jets win this game is force a turnover. I genuinely thought, I know they really only allowed one drive in the second half, because think about it. In the second half, Minnesota was 2-for-7 on third down. After going 7-for-11 in the first half, only 2-for-7, and they were 1-for-1 on third down on that touchdown drive. So it wasn't like they were 1-for-6 the rest of the time. The Jets were getting off the field. The Jets were getting off the field real quick. If they forced the third down, then they were getting off the field really quickly. They only had one sustained drive against them, that 175-yard drive. The Jets gave up 89 total yards in the second half, and 75 of them came on one drive. The defense was really good in the second half of this game for the Jets, but yet I felt that if they forced a turnover, that could have changed the momentum. Kirk Cousins was really bad in this game. I thought, other than a couple of good drives that he had, he was mostly pedestrian and on some drives really bad. Some throws he was really bad in this game, but like I said, how some things just were right there in front of them and they couldn't make the plays. The Jets had a couple of balls that were tipped in the air, a couple of balls that landed just in front of their safeties or linebackers that could have been interceptions or fumbles and stuff like that, and it just wasn't there for them. I genuinely thought that if the Jets got a momentum turnover like that, they could have definitely won that game in the second half. They needed to make one turnover. That's the only thing that you could look at on the Jets and say, wow, they didn't do that. There were this defense didn't do that in the second half. If they would have gotten a turnover, I think they would have won, but obviously the big thing, and this is what the game came down to, the Jets go 1-for-6 in the red zone. You can't go 1-for-6 in the red zone and win. It just doesn't happen. Minnesota on the other side, 3-for-3. Every time they were in the red zone, they scored a touchdown. Minnesota, 9-for-18, like we mentioned, total in the game on third down conversions. The Jets, 3-for-16, just a terrible job on third down. And part of that is they were some tough third down conversions. Now, they converted a couple of fourth downs, right? When they had to, some big plays. The third downs that they converted that they did convert were huge as well. But they played behind the sticks all day. That's part of that is penalties. Part of that is the inability to run the football. A lot of things play into that. And then you look at the turnover differential. The Jets turned the ball over twice. I know one was the last second pick by Mike White. That doesn't really count. And the other one was the first drive of the game on that deflected pass that we talked about. So not terrible turnovers by any means, but Minnesota didn't turn the ball over at all. And that's the difference in the game. Look, Mike White missed some throws. He didn't maneuver as well in the pocket. He can't really throw on the run. There's some stuff that he can't do, and we saw his limitations in this game. But the one thing about Mike White is it's so easy to play the results. It's so easy to look at this game and say, oh, Mike White did this, Mike White didn't do that, Mike White did this, blah, 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 blah. If Braxton Berrios catches a ball that hits him in both his hands and his chest, then all we're talking about today, all we're talking about on Monday, is Mike White is a hero. We're putting Mike White in the Hall of Fame. We're talking about the Jets being 8-4, and we're talking about them legitimately having a chance at winning this division and going on a playoff run and trusting that this guy is the man. It's so easy to look back and say that they lost and it's Mike White's fault and they can't win with him. But you can't do that. Because, like I said, they were that close. The ball was in Berrios' hands. They were so close to actually winning that game. And it's so easy to play the results, but look at the plays, watch the game, and tell me that you don't think this team can win and is capable of winning because Mike White is the quarterback. Not with him at the quarterback, but because he is the quarterback. And that means that this is Mike White's job. And no matter what happened in this game, I stand by him. It's his job right now. It's his job to lose. Mike White has earned the right to be the quarterback, the starting quarterback of the New York Jets. And he should be named the starting quarterback of the New York Jets in Robert Saleh's press conference on Monday. Here's what Garrett Wilson had to say about Mike White.
I mean, that boy's a dog, man. And that boy a dog, for real. He was out there controlling the huddle and keeping it. Never letting the moment get too big, man. It was cool to see, you know, looking back on it now. It's cool to think about. So, you know, I know that I go to work for that boy. He got something special about him.
This team has a confidence because this guy is the quarterback. And if this team is confident specifically because the quarterback and the quarterback is Mike White, and that makes them confident, that makes them a better, more confident team, then you have to stick with him no matter what. This game proved to me, and this is not playing the results, because like I said, if you play the results, yeah, they lost. What are you going to do about it? But if you look at the game as a whole, this game proved to me that Mike White should be the starting quarterback the rest of the season, and that Zach Wilson shouldn't be talked about until the Jets are legitimately out of the playoffs. And if that happens, okay, fine, you could go back to Zach Wilson just to see what he has. But until the Jets are in that position, Mike White should be the starting quarterback, because everyone, every single person on this team, they play for him, they play for each other, and they play better because he's on this team. And the one thing that happened in this game, which hasn't happened for me with the Jets team in a long time, is I genuinely started to love this team. The swag they play with, the emotion, they love to play with each other, they play for each other. And it starts with Mike White. You know what Mike White said after the game? Here's a contrast for you. Mike White said after the game that the Braxton Berrios throw was on him. The throw that hit his wide receivers in two hands and his chest. And if that throw is completed, if Berrios holds on, then they win the game. And we're talking about the Jets probably as a Super Bowl contender with the way Miami and San Francisco played, especially, and the injuries. We might be looking at this Jets as a Super Bowl contender after beating Minnesota and Minnesota the way they would come back in that game. And he dropped it. And guess what? Mike White said, that was my bad. I should have thrown a better throw there. He took responsibility. Someone else didn't do that, right? He also said this.
By no means are we, I think Coach Hall just said it, by no means are we trying to make this a moral victory, because moral victories don't count in the NFL, but really proud of how the guys stayed together. There was no moaning and complaining on the sideline. We stared adversity straight in the face and responded. Just got to respond better.
Mike White is the starting quarterback of the New York Jets. Period. Stop. That's it. They cannot go back to Zach. If you go back to Zach at this point, you're telling the entire team, you're telling the room that you don't care how they feel. You don't care about their opinion. You don't care about them as a cohesive unit and what they are and what they are as a unit, as one, as a team. And I don't think this Jets coaching staff will do that. I actually trust this coaching staff. I actually believe in this coaching staff. I actually believe in Robert Saleh. And here's why I believe in him. Here's what he had to say after the game about this team.
I'm proud to be this team's coach. I'm proud of every single person in that locker room. They absolutely fought their tails off. This team doesn't quit. There's no moral victories or anything like that. But if we play like that, I know we're going to win more often than not.
Like I said, there's no excuses. There's no moral victories. It sucks that they lost this game. But I think you learned a lot about this team. You learned about this coaching staff. You learned about the culture in that room. And a lot of it feels like it changed, and that change coincided with Mike White becoming the starting quarterback. The only thing is, it's a real shame. It's a real shame this happened now. I wish this would have happened a few weeks earlier. We talked about this on Friday. Like, if this would have happened earlier in the week, or earlier in the season, I should say, and Mike White played those two Patriots games, who knows? Maybe we're talking about the 9-3 Jets right now. I genuinely believe that. We could be talking about the 9-3 New York Jets right now. And it sucks, because at 7-5, you have two losses to the Patriots. You already have a loss to Cincinnati, Baltimore. There's a chance they're going to miss the playoffs, and it's going to be really hard for them to miss the playoffs. They have a tough schedule coming up. The Lions are playing well now. You also have to play in Buffalo, obviously, is their next game. I still believe in Trevor Lawrence and what he's capable of doing. It's going to be a tough stretch for the Jets. And it's a shame because this team, had they had this quarterback from the start of the season, could be in a much better position to make the playoffs now. And they might miss it. And that's just a shame. The one thing I do want to mention is I know expectations change. And I always say this in sports, how expectations do change. Yes, 100%. But to think about where we are now, that we're upset that we're taking moral victories from this game in a game in December that we expected to win against the 9-2 football team on the road. And we feel upset about this game, but not in a Jets kind of way. We feel upset that like we were right there. We were just a couple plays away and we should have won. I mean, think about how far we've come. And Steve Gelb said it perfectly on Twitter. He said, "The fact that we're in December talking about moral victories not being enough, it's progress in and of itself. The Jets showed a lot of fight today. That being said, there were a ton of missed opportunities. You hope today doesn't cost them in the end." I mean, he summed it up perfectly. It's fun to be here. It's fun to be talking about football games that matter for this Jets team in December. And it feels like this team finally became a cohesive team here in December, which is amazing. But it sucks that they couldn't take advantage of that and they missed the opportunities to win this game, because it might really cost them in the end. All right, I'm going to jump ahead to the late games. I'm skipping around a little bit as I recap all the games. I do this every week on the Monday episode. I like to recap all the games from Sunday, and I do it on Sunday night, and it's late Sunday night now. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning already, probably later at this point. Might even be 2 by now. Who knows? Yeah, it's 1:53. I don't care. I'm still up. I grind. I'm doing it. This game actually impacts the Jets, so that's why I want to talk about it. And it's also, I think, some of the biggest storylines from this week are in this game. It was one of the biggest matchups we talked about on Friday. It's San Francisco and Miami. It was a late game. San Francisco blows out Miami. I did not get this pick right. I thought Miami would keep it close. They didn't. It was 33-17, the final, but the big news is not that. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to miss the rest of the season. He breaks his foot. This is news also for the offseason. All the teams, Jets included, who had Jimmy Garoppolo circled as their next quarterback. I don't know how that's going to work for them now. So he's out for the year. Mr. Irrelevant steps in and backs him up. No longer irrelevant. His name is Brock Purdy. Purdy? I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He went 25 of 37 through 2 touchdowns and a pick. And he's the first Mr. Irrelevant. If you don't know what that is, it's the final pick in the draft. The last pick in the 7th round of the draft is called Mr. Irrelevant. He's the first Mr. Irrelevant ever to throw a touchdown in the NFL. Fun fact. And at some point, maybe when you have the scheme, you have the defense, and you have all those offensive skilled position players, maybe the quarterback really doesn't matter. Maybe Jimmy G was not that big a deal, but the Niners decided that they're not going to stick with Mr. Irrelevant the rest of the way. They go out and they sign Josh Johnson, who, if you remember the last two games he played, one as a Raven and one as a Jet actually last year, the Ravens against Cincinnati and the Jets, he stepped in for Mike White against Indianapolis when Mike White got hurt. He threw over 300 yards in each of those games, so 600 total, but a little more than that because it was more over 300 yards in each one of those games. He threw 5 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions, and completed 68% of his passes in both of those games. So he looked impressive in the 2 opportunities he got last season. Obviously, he's bounced around for a bunch of years in the league, but I do hope to see him get a legitimate chance. Now, the interesting part of this is both of these teams I had in my top 5 teams in football. On my power rankings on Wednesday's episode, I was like, yeah, these are 2 top 5 teams. These are major powerhouse teams. And neither one of those teams are now really in that conversation. I mean, can you keep them in that conversation without Jimmy Garoppolo? Look, Jimmy Garoppolo wins. That's all you can say about him. But he's out now, and it sucks for the Niners. Now, if they end up winning, does that prove everyone who was a Jimmy Garoppolo truth or wrong? And they say, oh, see, it had nothing to do with Garoppolo. What happens next season? Are they still just going to go back to Trey Lance next year? Was that the plan all along? Do they look for a stopgap guy? A guy who's from San Francisco? First name T, last name starts with a B. Tom Brady. I don't know. I know that rumor's been out there too, because everyone's talking about him as a free agent next year and the different destinations he can end up in. I could see him in green. Yeah, I could see him in green. I can't, actually. He would never. I don't know. I could dream. It would actually be typical Jets if they got 45-year-old, or I guess at that point he'd be 46-year-old Tom Brady on his last legs and he's actually bad. Like this year, I think he's genuinely playing well. Anyway, not the point. That's not the point. I'm getting derailed. Tua turns the ball over three times. He takes a major step back. I still love Mike McDaniel. He's on the side going, no, that's my fault. I effed up. You see him mouthing it. You see him upset on the sideline. But also in this game, Tua did sprain his ankle, which is important. He might miss time. And the big concern, if you remember, coming into Tua's career in the NFL were the injuries. It had nothing to do with his ability to play. The ability to play was not a big deal, but a hip injury coming into the NFL. Now, he's had a head injury this year. He's had an ankle injury. At some point, those injuries that feel random and disconnected from each other and separate individual events, at some point, they become one. At some point, it becomes a label of injury prone. It's not that you tore your ACL and then you hurt your elbow and all those different things. It's the combination of everything together. It sucks that that's how it works because, yes, independently, they are all just fluke injuries maybe. But as a whole, it's a guy who clearly cannot stay healthy. And now they have to go to Thompson again, who played against the Jets in that game of the Jets, 40-10 or something like that. So they have to go back to that guy for a little bit. We talked about this with the head injury. We said, well, Tua's always one big hit away, right, from being out again with his third concussion of the season. And that might keep him out significant time. But this might now keep him out significant time. So who knows how that goes. I think both of those teams maybe drop out of the top five in the NFL right now. A, because of how Tua played and how Miami played overall. I think San Francisco continued to play incredibly well. But without Jimmy G, I think there's major concerns. Josh Johnson, maybe a starting quarterback in the NFL, but he's not a Super Bowl capable quarterback in the NFL, I don't think, even with all that talent around him. Either way, this is good for the Jets. The reason I said it impacts the Jets because Miami loses. They're 8-4. So you kind of try and keep pace with Miami here. You already beat them once. Maybe the second time you play them, maybe. They don't have Tua that time either. And you get to beat Skylar Thompson again. So the Jets, that's huge for them. If it ultimately does come down to one of those two teams making the playoffs, maybe they can leapfrog Miami and make the playoffs over them. Another game that impacts the Jets, and this one's not great for the Jets, is Denver and Baltimore. Baltimore pulls the game out of their asses. They win 10-9, and now this feels like last year's Ravens because Patrick Queen gets hurt, Isaiah Likely gets hurt, and of course Lamar Jackson gets hurt, and it's Tyler Huntley out there. And it's Tyler Huntley in a game that there's no points scored, and the game sucks, and it's back and forth, and both teams clearly suck, and it's like, who wants to lose this game? I want to lose this game. And at the end, Tyler Huntley pulls it out with a crazy touchdown drive after they converted a fourth down that they really got stopped on, a 4th-and-1, and they ran it with Mark Andrews, and he really got stuffed. And then somehow he found a second seam and burst through it and picked up the first down. That was just a wild play. They end up driving down the field and score on Denver's defense. Denver only puts up 9 points. Russell Wilson. I feel bad for Nathaniel Hackett. I said this during the game. I do feel bad for him because I don't think this is all on him. You cannot blame him. He comes here. He expects to have this great quarterback. They sign him to a long-term contract. If he benches Russell Wilson at any point, he's immediately fired. No doubt in my mind. And so you can't bench the guy who's been, I think, undoubtedly the biggest problem for this team because he has the huge contract. He was just part of the huge trade to get him here. So you can't touch that guy. He's untouchable. But if you keep playing him, you're going to lose your job also. It's catch 22 for Nathaniel Hackett. I feel bad for him. Not much to say, but he's probably going to lose his job at the end of the season, and it sucks because he doesn't deserve to, in my opinion. On the Ravens side, we don't know how long Lamar is going to be out for, and that's important. That could be huge. Remember last year, he had an injury, and they kept saying, yeah, it's week to week, day to day, which is what John Harbaugh said. He said, it's day to day or week to week, which is a weird thing to say. Which one is it? But they're going to be vague about it. They're vague about everything. John Harbaugh was weird in the press conference. He was also angry. I don't want to talk about any of these narratives. He comes in with like this positive attitude, like, oh, it's so good to be a Raven. We're so blessed to be a Raven. Like he's trying to change the narrative around this team where when this team wins, it feels like they lost. And he comes into the press conference talking about how lucky they are and how proud they are. It didn't feel like a good win. It didn't feel like a lucky, proud win. And he comes into the press conference like, yeah, we pulled this game out. We're tough. It didn't feel like that. It felt like, oh, thank God we somehow got by in this game. And he's like, yeah, I don't want to talk about any of these narratives. All that matters is that we're 8-4 and we won. And for some reason, when the Ravens win, it somehow always feels like they lost. They make you feel like, oh my God, this team is just terrible. How do they keep doing this? And specifically in their wins, they do that. Somehow in their losses, it's like, oh, they were leading the whole game. They played really well. And then at the end of the game, they just blew it. But in their wins, they make you feel worse about them than when they lose. It's the weirdest thing. Greg Roman, by the way, is probably going to be calling plays for Stanford by the end of the week because he's being recruited to be their head coach. So that's going to be fun. All Ravens fan want him out anyway. And the play call he had, my God, the play call he had to have Prochet, their wide receiver, I think, throw a pass to the end zone. I love when these trick plays don't work in the NFL because they were starting to work at way too high of a clip and everyone's trying these wild trick plays. The Ravens were driving down the field. The team actually had momentum and they were, I think, inside the 20-yard line, inside the red zone, and they decide to run this crazy reverse with Prochet throwing the ball, and obviously he throws an interception. They looked it up on CBS. He had never thrown a pass in high school, never thrown a pass in college. So, yeah, just throw a pass in the NFL because anyone could do it, apparently. Turns out you actually need a quarterback who's good, and there aren't even 32 of those. So there's not one per team, and yet you're going to have James Prochet throw, as opposed to just the guy Tyler Huntley, who's already your backup quarterback, not the best quarterback on your team. So you chose the guy who's never thrown a pass ever, not professionally, not in college, not in school, not in high school, ever. Kind of weird. But I did kind of call this game, if you think about it. I said 13-16, something like that, dirty game. I did have Denver to cover the 9.5. I had the under. I won that bet. But like I said, this is not great for the Ravens, but it's not great for the Jets. The Jets, this doesn't feel really good. Maybe you don't think of the Ravens as a huge threat if they don't have Lamar Jackson for a few weeks. And they start losing a couple of games, but they have a really light schedule the rest of the way. And a 10-9 win, just sneaking a win by. If they would have lost this game, they'd have the same record as the Jets, and that would be very helpful for the Jets because, obviously, like we said, the Ravens do have that tiebreaker. They did already beat the Jets, but if you're looking at that last wild card spot, we talked about all the AFC playoff scenarios on last podcast. Not great for the Jets at all. The Ravens are going to be fighting, though, for the division still because it's crazy. They're still involved in the division. They already beat Cincinnati once. It feels like the Ravens haven't been good in about a month and a half. And yet they're still battling in the division with Cincinnati for the North title. And Cincinnati, just an all-time game. Patrick Mahomes is still amazing. He's still incredible. That play where he jumped over the goal line and reached over. Tony Romo was like, that reminded me of Michael Jordan. And this is the Michael Jordan of the NFL. That was weird. Called Patrick Mahomes the Michael Jordan of the NFL. It's not that weird because Patrick Mahomes is incredible. And Patrick Mahomes is still the best quarterback in the NFL. But Joe Burrow is the best winner in the NFL, and I'll stand by it. And I texted this to my father. I sent this text to my father. I sent this text the day of the AFC divisional round last year. Obviously, we remember the divisional round when Cincinnati beat Tennessee, and it was the day of the crazy Buffalo against Kansas City game. And it was earlier that day, before the Buffalo-Kansas City game, I had the following text thread with my father. So we're going back to the playoffs last year, January of 2022. This is what I said. I said, Cincinnati put up 19 points last night and won. And today, Mahomes and Josh Allen are probably each going to put up 30 points. And in the next week, they'll be favored by a million against Burrow. And watch Burrow pull it out and win and make it to the Super Bowl. To which my father replied, you take Burrow over Mahomes? So I said, not talent-wise, .. I feel like he's just a dog. If I had to guess who over the next 15 years is the guy we say, oh, he got lucky, he keeps winning these games by luck, or, oh, he keeps winning, but he's lucky, or this quarterback is better than him, that quarterback is better than him, but yet he's the one always winning in the end, I take Burrow over anyone. Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes will be like Manning and Rodgers, while Burrow is Brady. But that's just my guess. Well, I was right about that. I really predicted that perfectly because, like I said, it literally happened. Mahomes and Allen put up a ton of points in that game, in that AFC divisional game. They get favored by a ton against Cincinnati, and then Burrow somehow pulls that game out of his ass and goes to the Super Bowl, and now it's three times in a row that he somehow pulled a game out of his ass, and I feel like that even more today. Joe Burrow reaffirmed what I thought about him originally and what I thought about him when I sent that text in January of this year. This guy is legitimately a winner, and that's all it comes down to. He is a guy who, no matter what the scenario is, he finds a way to win. He's one of the most impressive quarterbacks in the NFL. If I had to take one guy, and still I take Mahomes over him as talent and everything that he has because Mahomes has one. But when I put Joe Burrow as my number two quarterback in the league last week, when I talked about the quarterbacks on Wednesday's episode, I think it was actually on Friday's episode, this reaffirms what I thought about Joe Burrow all along. Joe Burrow is incredible. If there are some guys that are just winners. We see it with Tom Brady. It's not necessarily a talent thing. It's just guys who find a way to win. Joe Burrow is that guy. He's 3-0 against Mahomes in 2022. All three of those games were wins by 3 points. So it's not like he's blowing him out, but he's the one who's finding ways to win at the end of the games against the guy who always finds a way to win at the end of the game. Whether there's 13 seconds left on the clock or whatever it is, he always finds a way to win it. But Burrow doesn't let it get to that point. And I was in the studio with a couple of producers, and I'm like, okay, so Cincinnati's up 3 here. It's third down. It was like the 3rd and 13. I was like, do they have to go for it twice? Do they run here and then try and pick up the first down? Do they kick a field goal? They were in for field goal range. I'm like, but making a 6-point game and then giving Mahomes the ball back with a minute left doesn't help you. 6-point game is the same as a 3-point game. None of it matters. I guess it's, you can't let them tie it with a field goal. But I was like, maybe they go for it on fourth down. And then before I could even finish the sentence, Joe Burrow threw an 18-yard pass to pick up the fourth down and ice the game. Pick up the first down, I should say, and ice the game. On 3rd and 12. He just doesn't let you get the ball back. He finds those plays in him. He's ice cold, ice in his veins. And by the way, if you look at the MVP odds, so Mahomes shifted to plus 120. He was in the minuses, but after this loss, he shifted to plus 120. This is updated as of tonight. Jalen Hurts obviously jumps up to plus 155, but Burrow is still sitting at plus 750. And if they find a way to pull out this division, and after this kind of win, with everyone watching them because it was the only game still going on at the time, and they somehow pull out that game against Mahomes, and they have a couple of games later in the year. Like I said, if they get that game against Baltimore on national TV on Sunday Night Football to end the season, that's a great bet. I threw some money. I'm not going to lie. I threw some money on Burrow, plus 750 to win MVP. I love that bet. Also, though, not great for the Jets because Cincinnati, like I said, they're still battling with Baltimore. But if both of those teams keep pace with each other, then one of the teams is going to win the division and the other will make the wild card spot. Let's stick with the NFC North as we go to the next game. I've been taking my time on these first three games, so I got to start picking up the North. I got through four already. I should start picking up the pace as we go through the games. Cleveland, they're in the AFC North. They beat Houston 27-14. Obviously, Deshaun Watson's return. And it's exactly also, I predicted this game perfectly. I actually got this pick right as well. I took Cleveland -7.5. The Texans really wanted it. They wanted it bad. They get the safety. They obviously, they are out early. They're controlling the game. They have all the energy. They want to beat it down. They want to show Deshaun Watson. They want to show him up. They want to beat him so badly. But at the end of the day, the Texans don't have the talent. And the Browns do, and like I said, it wasn't Deshaun Watson. He was rusty. He sucked. But Nick Chubb, Donovan Peoples-Jones returned a touchdown, obviously returned a kick for a touchdown. Nick Chubb was fantastic running the ball all day, and they get the win 27-14. This pick I got wrong. It was Pittsburgh, the last team in the AFC North. They played Atlanta for my favorite division, the NFC South. I got this wrong. Atlanta was disappointing in this game. Pittsburgh was also weirdly disappointing in this game. And it's just a strange two teams. It's two teams that I can't get a read on right now. Kenny Pickett looks like he might be okay. Mariota is Mariota. So the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? With Marcus Mariota, we keep saying, oh, he's this guy. Maybe he actually is him. And every week we flip-flop on him, and it's like, no, he's just the same. He's Marcus Mariota. And like I said, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And they stayed the same in Chicago for this guy.
You never know when it's going to be your last one. You know, I got great fans here in Chicago. But it truly has been a second home for me. We've had a lot of big wins here over the years, a lot of great moments with Cobby and with so many other guys over the years. So it's fun to come back here, get a win, and let the fans know I'm still here.
He stands there saying it with such a smug smirk on his face, and like, you don't have the right to do that anymore, Aaron Rodgers. Like, I get it. You still beat the Bears. Yes, that's what you do better than anything. You go to Chicago and you beat the Bears and you shove it in their face. But it's kind of sad. Like, it's almost gotten pathetic for him that this is what he has left, that this is what he's so happy about. And he's like smiling at the camera and looking at the crowd and saluting them. Like, really? Aaron Rodgers, this is how far you've fallen? I get it. Like, the greats, I guess, have these games where he knows maybe this is his last time ever as a Packer in Chicago and he gets to do this. So he decided to, quote, put on a show for them and then show them up at the end of it. But really, he went 18-31. Threw a touchdown, 182 yards, no picks. Like, he wasn't that great. Just kind of dumb. By the way, speaking of, Justin Fields is the greatest loser ever. He's on SportsCenter. Everyone's talking about these crazy runs that he has, these crazy plays, but he somehow figures out a way. Almost more impressive than him running the football and the crazy plays he makes on the field is how he always, always make sure that they lose every single game. Sticking with that division and taking you to a team, by the way, the game was the final scores. Green Bay 28, Chicago 19. I got my pick wrong. I told you I was going to get my pick wrong. I took them anyway because I was just shocked that Chicago was not favored in this game. Detroit is better than both of those teams, though. And are the Lions actually good? They beat Jacksonville 40-14. I don't think I'm wrong about Trevor Lawrence because of one game. That would be crazy for me to say. He's played really well the last few weeks. The Lions dominated this game. They dominated up front with their defense. They got sacks. They stopped the run. And they leaned on their running game. They controlled the clock the entire time. They crushed in the time of possession. And when they needed to make throws, they had Jared Goff make throws. And it's kind of funny because it reminds you of like a Ryan Tannehill type game where I think Jared Goff might actually be better than Ryan Tannehill. And this is a guy who they're talking about moving off of after this season. I saw some rumors where I think Lamar Jackson likes to tweet that the Lions blew out, they blew out Jacksonville today. And Lamar liked the tweet. Yay, he's coming to the... He was sitting in the locker room bored after the game or during the game because everyone was bored during that Ravens game and he was hurt. And he was liking a lot of tweets. He was all over Twitter during that time period. So he liked a random tweet. I don't think that means he's coming to the Lions necessarily. Although it will be an interesting, if he is hurt the rest of the season or hurt most of the rest of the season, it'll be an interesting free agency to see what happens with that. Do you franchise tag him? Do you give him a long contract if he was hurt? Someone else probably will. There are plenty of desperate teams. But it's funny because Jared Goff did exactly what you would want him to do. He made the big throws when he needed to. He leaned heavily on the run, leaned on the defense, and they controlled the time of possession. They controlled the clock. And when he needed to make a big throw, he stepped up and made the throw. So good job by the Lions. And they've maybe even pushed themselves into the wildcard conversation because if you don't believe in the Giants or Washington or Seattle, then maybe they could slip in 5-7 right now. If you think those teams are going to come down and end up maybe at around 9-8, 8-9, why can't the Lions get there? Speaking of the Giants and Washington, they tied, which makes perfect sense. Final score was 20-20. I did pick the Giants at +1.5, I think. So I do get the win on that one. But if you think about it, both of these teams have too much fight in them to lose. Taylor Heinicke, Brian Daboll, the coaching of the Giants. But at the same time, neither one of these teams has the talent to win. So a tie was the only way this game could have ended, and we should have predicted that. In the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of question marks to answer. So while these teams are both, well, one is 7-4-1, one is 7-5-1, and the rest of the season, there's playoffs to be made. There's a lot on the line for them, but there's more than that. Washington, are you getting a real look at Taylor Heinicke? Are you deciding if this is the guy you want to stick with as your starting quarterback moving forward? Neither of these teams are going to be in a good enough draft position to draft one of the top quarterbacks in the draft. Do they think that their roster is good enough to go after an Aaron Rodgers, to go after a Jimmy Garoppolo, to go after Lamar Jackson and some of the other free agent quarterbacks? Are the Giants sticking with Daniel Jones? Are they giving him another contract? Are they deciding to keep Saquon Barkley, give him another contract who's slowed down significantly since his early season success after leaning on him so much? It makes sense. He wasn't going to be able to keep up that pace, and he can't. There's a lot of questions other than just the playoffs to answer for these two teams moving forward as we move down the stretch of the season. The team that separated themselves in the NFC Beast, as we like to call it, is clearly Philly. And not only in the NFC East, but in the NFC, period. They've totally separated themselves. And look, it was too easy. Everyone was on Tennessee before this game. Like we talked about before the Jets game, everyone was on the Jets. Everyone was on Tennessee. It was like 4.5. Oh, that's too much. That's too much. Sometimes Vegas knows. They were begging you to take Tennessee. And Philly blows them out 35-10. And Philly's good. I don't know what to tell you. We talked about it last week. That was the most complete performance of the season. And Bill Simmons called it the jerk fest win, where everyone's just running around jerking each other off because they won. But they did it again. They had another jerk fest win. They followed up a jerk fest win with a second jerk fest win. Are you kidding me? Pretty incredible performance by Philly. AJ Brown was insane. He just took over the game. You could tell as he was playing, the way he was playing, that touchdown that he had where he just grabbed the ball out of the defender's hands. That contested catch is incredible. It was one of those games where you could tell he was literally trying to take control of that game because he wanted it more than the other guy. And Jalen Hurts barely ran the ball today. He's going to have more runs than he's ever had in his career, and he's going to be in the top of the most rushing attempts for a quarterback ever. He's going to be up there. But him passing the ball is incredible. And are we supposed to be talking about him as one of the top quarterbacks? Are we supposed to be putting him in the conversation with Allen and Mahomes and Burrow and those guys? Because he's definitely playing like we should be. And like I mentioned earlier, he took a real step in the MVP conversation. In the MVP race, he's now plus 150. He's close to Mahomes, right? A lot of people actually think he has a better shot at winning it than Patrick Mahomes. And obviously, Burrow is right there. I think Burrow does close the gap because of the win against Mahomes. But this is a real conversation we should be having right now about Jalen Hurts and this Philly team. As far as the Titans, the thing about the Titans is they rely on keeping games close. Derrick Henry gets better and better as games go on. Just a fact, just how he's been his entire career. And early in the game, if he's only going to carry it 11 times, then it makes sense that he's only going to get 30 yards and average 2.7 yards per carry. Because as the game goes on, he wears out the D and he continues to run and run into you again and again and again. And that's when he gets better as the game goes on. It's what's so impressive about him. But if you're not in a close enough game that you don't have the ability to keep handing it off to him, if you're getting blown out, then he can't keep handing it off to him and the game ends. So a really just tough showing for Derrick Henry, but the Titans rely on keeping the game close. And in this game, credit Philly because they didn't allow themselves to keep this game or to keep the Titans in this game. A couple of games left to get to as my voice is starting to go, so that's fun. Like I mentioned, it is late at night already. and also, I did have some MLB stuff I wanted to talk about. DeGrom left. I don't know if you've heard. He left the Mets. Aaron Judge, as of now, is still a free agent. Let's hope he stays a free agent until Wednesday because I'm going to get to that on Wednesday's episode. Talk some baseball, talk some free agency. There's other stuff going on in the world. There's hockey that I don't want to talk about at all. There's Knicks basketball, which is upsetting also. It's funny. Like, the only thing I can lean on for my sports entertainment right now is the Jets. Like, they are... It's not that they're the team I trust to win because I still don't trust them to win necessarily. But they're the team that's giving me the most enjoyment, the most, like, just the emotional ride that I like, not the negative emotions that I get from sports sometimes. It's like the positive emotions. I'm relying on the Jets for that more than any other team. And I don't know when the last time that was the case in my life is. Even when they were winning, they were always frustrating. And this team, the way they currently are with Mike White and Salah and Douglas and all those guys and Sauce, and it's just fun. Garrett Wilson, just good vibes, good people. Like it. Yeah. Anyway, a former Jet, Seattle. Geno Smith and the LA Rams. So I told you before this game that Matthew Stafford was going to play. I was wrong. Matthew Stafford instead was placed on IR. All indications were that he was going to play, and then he gets placed on IR, I think last night or Sunday morning. He gets placed on IR, so he doesn't play in this game. And Seattle, to me, played it way too close. If you think about it, like, they should have blown out this game, but they found a way, so credit them. And there were a couple times this game I was like, ah, Geno. Just Geno being Geno again, and he's not the same guy. And every time I want to count him out, every time I want to write him off, he doesn't write back. And it just, he keeps not writing back. And that's the unfortunate part, because Geno Smith keeps doing it. They fought, somehow pull out a win in this game. They win 27-23. I did pick the Rams +4.5, so I do get the win barely on that one. And the Rams now have their 9th loss of the season and are officially going to be under 500 on the season. Just a horrible collapse from where they were. But I talked about this a bunch of weeks ago. I talked about this at the beginning of the season when it really looked like it was heading in this direction. Worth it. They do it all over again because you won a Super Bowl. And guess what? That's the ultimate goal. So there's no like, oh, wow, well, draft picks and long term and blah, blah, blah. Ryan Russillo did a segment, and he sometimes does this where he copies my segments after I do them. Makes me feel great. I know he's not copying me. I know it just happens to be. I come up with the great segments, so sometimes he's going to do the same thing. But no, he did mention on his podcast, he's like, somebody asked him, would you rather win a championship this year or have Victor Wembanyama? And he's like, well, isn't the point of getting Victor Wembanyama to win you a championship and it doesn't guarantee it either? Yes, I'll take the guaranteed championship this year and suck for the next 20 years without Victor Wembanyama. Because the whole point of Victor Wembanyama is to win the championship. Some people forget that. So when we talk about all these draft picks and we talk about everything that LA did and how tough this season has been, you forget the part that they won the Super Bowl. They have the ring. What do they say? Banners fly forever? It does, right? Pennants fly forever? Flags fly forever? Not sure what the saying is, but they won the Super Bowl. Worth it. All right, Las Vegas played against the Chargers. I picked this game correctly also because I don't trust the Chargers. It's classic. They get killed, and at the end of this game, the takeaway that everyone's going to have is that Justin Herbert is incredible. Justin Herbert is amazing. I talked about it with Justin Fields, how he's the greatest loser ever. Herbert might be the greatest loser ever. This is, by the way, good for the Jets because they lose. They're 7-6 now, maybe 6-6. Both of these teams have talent. Neither one of these teams is good. I truly believe that. So yes, they have all the talent in the world, but at some point that doesn't matter, right? You could be talented and really bad. Talent isn't the end all be all. It just isn't. And these two teams are bad teams. And when we watched that game last year and everyone talked about, oh, they should just go for the tie and all those different things. And we're like, oh, this is going to be a great matchup forever and blah, blah, blah. And we got sucked into it. We should have realized then that these are just two really bad teams. And just because they play close, entertaining games, it's a sloppy, bad brand of football that I personally don't enjoy. And I like neither of these teams, but I like the Chargers less. And I'm pretty happy that they lost. This, of course, takes us to Sunday Night Football. Sunday Night Football. By the way, this makes me wonder, do the Colts know that football games have two halves? Because last week they played pretty well in the second half, but didn't show up at all for the first half. And this week was the exact opposite. They actually showed up for the first half. They played in this game. They played close. And then in the second half happened. Ultimately, the final score is 54-19 for Dallas. They covered the 9.5. Pretty handily. I didn't think they would. So 7-7 on my picks for the week. Not great, but typical Cowboys. And this is what the Cowboys always do. They pile on crappy teams late with pick sixes and fumble recovery touchdowns and running touchdowns. Like, how many times do we need to see Zeke get a garbage time touchdown? It's all the time. And they do that every single time they play a bad team and they get up big. All of a sudden they keep piling on just to go ahead and lose in the wild card round. Like they always do. Like, I don't trust this team. I still don't trust Dak. When this game was close, he wasn't the one who was allowing them to pull away. Now, the difference between this team and past teams, yes, they have a generational defense. Like, generational because the turnovers they create, they're a really good defense on Micah Parsons. But maybe someone once should just tell Trayvon Diggs, like, don't go for every pump fake. Don't break on every single route. Maybe just actually play corner instead of trying to always play the ball. Because that's going to come back to bite you at some point, and it does pretty much on a consistent basis. And the difference between this team and past teams is that they finally decided that Tony Pollard is RB1. And he's a great RB1. And guess what? Zeke is a fresh guy off the bench and a second option. RB2 kind of come in for a few plays here and there. He actually is effective in that role. So I do like what they're doing this season better than anything they've done in the past. Oh, and Odell Beckham might be signing with them. Look, I didn't get involved in all the Odell Beckham shenanigans on this podcast. I tried to stay away from it. I know I mentioned his name a couple times earlier in the season about the Packers and Ravens. That was way earlier in the season. I wasn't talking about it like every single 5 seconds like the rest of the media is talking about it the last few weeks. I don't care. I don't care where Odell Beckham goes because he's a guy who's not been that great for a bunch of years and he's coming off a knee injury and who knows what he's going to be. He's going to be the second or third wide receiver on whatever team takes him. Anyway, that's my Odell Beckham piece. So maybe they'll have him, CeeDee Lamb, Zeke, Pollard, like we said, Micah Parsons on the defensive side. Yeah, there's a possibility that this team is different than others, but I see a lot of the same similarities. They'll run up the score against bad teams, and in a tight game, you're still relying on Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott to make the biggest decisions and plays to win you your season. Don't love it. By the way, the Colts kneeled out this game at the end of the game, down 35. They took a knee on the last play of the game, almost as if to say, you guys didn't kneel, so here, we'll show you how it's done. Because guess what? That's what you're supposed to do when you're blowing a team out by 35 at the end of the game. You're not supposed to keep trying to pile on. But you guys are the Cowboys, so you wouldn't know that. Anyway, like I said, 7-7 on my picks. Not great. Not great, Bob, at all. But I'll try one more time. I'll try and go over 500 for the week. New Orleans is at Tampa Bay. I saw the line. Couldn't avoid it. -6.5. I want to take Tampa Bay. I don't know why. Dalton sucks, and there's no more Sean Payton. Sean Payton and New Orleans totally destroyed Tom Brady and the Bucs. We know that, but it's not Sean Payton anymore, and Andy Dalton is really bad. I hope that by the end of this game, he's not the quarterback. I hope they rely heavily on my guy Taysom Hill because I, like an idiot, decided to start him in my fantasy league, which no one cares about, but just give me a second here. I decided to start Taysom Hill last second before the game over Cole Kmet. If I had started Cole Kmet, my game would be over, and I would have won. But now I need 6 points from Taysom Hill at the tight end slash running back slash quarterback slash utility man spot. And I don't even trust them to put him in the game at least once. They let him throw it twice, run the ball. Hopefully he gets a goal line run. That's all I can pray for. But I think Brady has looked really good the last few weeks. And I hope Byron Lefkowitz and Todd Bowles have learned from their mistakes. I think Brady on national TV, he generally shows up for those games. I think he'll understand that it's a big game. It's Buck and Aikman. It's Monday Night Football. I didn't think this line would be this big. -6.5 feels big, but I do think Tampa Bay should win by a touchdown because I do think New Orleans is a really bad football team. I've mentioned that multiple times on this podcast. But I wish I hadn't seen it. I would have thought the line would have been like 3.5 or something. And then I would have had to take New Orleans +6.5 according to my method. But I didn't, so I'm taking Tampa Bay -6.5. And if they lose, Bruce Arians should step down onto the sidelines. You hear my voice going. I'm not even going to try and hide it. I've been stopping and starting sentences over and over again because I just, my voice is done for the night, unfortunately. But so we'll get to baseball on Wednesday, like we said. But Bruce Arians should take over on the sideline if they lose. That's my final piece on that because I think Todd Bowles is what's holding this team back right now. All right, that's going to do it because I can't talk anymore. Thank you so much to everyone who listens. I appreciate it so much. I say it on every episode, and I hope it doesn't come to the point where it's like, oh, he just says that at the end of the episode or the beginning of the episode. I mean it. I need people to listen. I hope you share it. It means so much to me. I hate self-promoting myself. I think I'm good at this. I like what I do. I hope I can somehow maneuver this into a long-term career. I still think about it sometimes. Like on a day like today, I came home and someone paid me to just shoot the bull and talk sports and hang out with a bunch of dudes watching football. And someone paid me to do that. So that alone is wild. It's not the ultimate career goal, but hopefully we'll get there. And I need you guys to do it. So thank you again to everyone who listens. I appreciate you so much. And I will talk to you all on Wednesday's episode of the Rami Levy Podcast. Until then, see ya. You were the best nights of my life. You got the light that always shines. I miss the way that you move and the way I get high. When you take me to your heights, like I'm standing in the sky. I see your subway cars and your old graffiti. I breathe your air when I land in another city. I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. I know. Everywhere I go, oh, oh, I change it all. Oh, oh, always on my road, I'm still New York. You're the only that I'll ever know. My concrete walls, I'm still New York. I'm still New York. Ooh. Oh, I'm still New York. Yeah. And I wanna drive down Riverside. See the birds flying on the high line. With the sidewalks burning, we pray for rain in July. I want the Yankees 99, yeah. And the Knicks on a sold out night. When the curtains close and the Broadway streets are alive. Hey. I need your heartbeat close, don't you ever leave me. And I breathe your air when I land in another city. And I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. Yeah, you're all I know. Everywhere I go, oh, oh, I change it all. Oh, oh, always on my road, I'm still New York. You're the only that I'll ever know. My concrete walls, I'm still New York.
Yeah, BK born and raised, I was God sent. To hit them courts out in Prospect, take them long walks on my time spin. Just a kid with that empire, stay the mindset. Kick flipping off a blind deck, dipping from the New York City's finest. Yeah, said I've been up on my New York shit. Walking down the block with my New York bitch. I can never leave my city, ain't nothing like it. Even if I do though, I can never hide it. Top down on the west side when I'm driving. East side be the only side that I'm riding. And I'm still New York.
saves it all. No, I ain't saves it all. I'm still young.